I'm Tom Hall. Welcome to Midday. My guest today is Calvin Butler, the Senior Executive Vice President of Exelon and the CEO of Exelon Utilities. He's in charge of six utility companies in the Mid-Atlantic region, including BGE. Although its corporate headquarters are in Chicago, Exelon remains one of Baltimore's most significant corporate citizens. Last winter, extreme weather crippled energy supplies in Texas. Cyber hacks interrupted oil and gas supplies in the Colonial Pipeline this spring. Are our energy resources protected against threats from climate change and bad actors? Plus, Mr. Butler is also the chair of the Greater Baltimore Committee. What's the best way to make Baltimore businesses more diverse, equitable, and inclusive? Calvin Butler joins me today on Midday after the news. Hey, everybody. Welcome. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks so much for hanging with us today. The list of hopefuls in the 2022 governor's race got a little bigger yesterday. In a campaign video, the author and nonprofit executive Wes Moore, who has also hosted a show called Future City here on WYPR, announced his candidacy in the race for the Democratic nomination for governor. Moore's entrance into the race has been expected for some time. He joins a crowded field that includes former Prince George's County Executive Rashawn Baker, State Comptroller Peter Franchot, former State Attorney General Douglas Gansler, the tech entrepreneur Michael Rosenbaum, and former U.S. Secretary of Education John King. Moore is 42 years old, a military veteran, and a best-selling author who is the former CEO of an anti-poverty organization called the Robin Hood Foundation. The primary is a little more than a year from now. We, of course, will cover it as events unfold. My guest today is Calvin Butler, the Senior Executive Vice President of the energy company Exelon and the Chief Executive Officer of Exelon Utilities, a group of six companies that includes BGE. Mr. Butler is also the chair of the Board of Directors of the Greater Baltimore Committee, a network of business and nonprofit CEOs, university presidents, and religious leaders. African-American CEOs are still rare in business. In a recent address to the GBC's annual meeting, Mr. Butler talked about how companies need to make diversity, equity, and inclusion a central tenet of their businesses to not only increase representation among people of color, but also to tap into a talent pool that is all too often overlooked. Calvin Butler joins us from Orlando, Florida. Cal Butler, it's good to talk to you. Our paths haven't crossed in a while, and I'm glad they're crossing today.
Thank you, Tom, and good to be here. Thank you for having me.
Do you think that there is a clear understanding in the business community that things are different? The conversation about diversity, equity, and inclusion is different now because of what happened last summer with the death of George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, and others, and the protests that, you know, took place not only in the United States, but literally around the world. Is there a different tone, a different sense of understanding in the business community that you're feeling with your colleagues at the Greater Baltimore Committee?
The quick answer is yes. But having said that, I also don't believe there is a clear understanding of what to do next. I think all of my peers and my colleagues have an understanding that we need to do something different. We need to lean into the conversation. We need to be intentional about our efforts. But what comes up short is what we do, how we communicate what we're doing, and then how do we sustain our efforts? There's a lot of goodwill out there in terms of wanting to make a difference. I have not spoken to anyone who has said, yeah, that's not my issue, or that's not something I want to do, or we're not trying to engage a broader base of customers, our communities, our people, our leaders. They don't say that. I think the hesitation is they don't want to do anything wrong. They don't want to offend anyone. And how do they sustain that and engage their employee base and their entire company into the efforts?
I spoke a few months ago with a really interesting scholar from NYU. She teaches journalism there. Her name is Pamela Newkirk. And Pam wrote a book about the billion-dollar diversity business and how companies across the board were hiring these people to come in and give workshops and training about diversity and equity and inclusion. And companies were spending literally $1 billion annually on this kind of training. And they had very little to show for it. Very few African-American CEOs in the front office, fewer black people on boards of directors. You know the litany of where the deficits are.
Yes, sir.
So what does one do? I mean, what has Exelon done? What are some of the better examples of businesses in Baltimore who are making some strides and doing some things right? What's working?
Great question and big question. First and foremost, you're absolutely right. It is a billion-dollar industry. And it goes to my first response to you is that people want to lean into this issue and be in part of this conversation. But also to your point, the results, all the measures that you talked about in terms of gauging minority-owned businesses, in terms of putting people of color in their executive ranks, adding people of color to their boards of directors, are falling short. Because what happens is the sustaining of the efforts is not done. Because it also requires everyone to be engaged, from the board of directors and the CEO to middle management, first-level supervisors. And we also have to recognize it's a journey. It's not just a one-stop shop. It's not just committing to that training and then saying, oh, okay, we did our part. Let's see what happens. To your question about what Exelon has done, we've been very intentional about our steps. And I would not be lying to you to say that we're there yet. We're on that journey. But a couple of things I think we did very well. And first and foremost, we measure everything we do. As people always say, you don't improve something if you're not measuring it. We have put measurements in on our hiring, our promotions, what we spend with diverse suppliers. And then what we do as a leadership team quarterly, we bring in front of our executive leadership team, and each business lead reports out on where we are. Now, it's important to note, as soon as you think of hiring, people say, well, now you guys are putting in quotas. There's something wrong with quotas. Let me be very clear. We did not. What we did say to people is that, and I'll say speak for myself and the company, is that when we have an open position, we do not allow a hire to be made if it is not a diverse slate. We do not allow a hire to be made if there is not a diverse panel that is interviewing for that job. Because what we believe is that if you have a diverse slate and a diverse panel, you remove some biases because people are engaging and talking. Not once have I ever said to anyone, you have to hire a woman or a person of color. I always give management the ability to hire the best person. But by creating a diverse slate and having a diverse panel, you get diverse hires, because people engage in the conversation, and you also have more talent around the table. And as a result, you talk about BGE. I was CEO of BGE for 6 years. BGE now has the most diverse workforce that it's ever had in its 204-year history. It has its most diverse management team, most diverse executive team, and a diverse board of directors. And it didn't happen by happenstance. We were very intentional. And as a result of that, BGE has had its best results in its 204-year company history. And that's why I believe it is important. It's not only important because of the communities we represent, it's important because I believe you get better business results when you have a diverse leadership team around the table. The second thing that Exelon did was we made a commitment to partnering with diverse suppliers. Proud to say that Exelon is the only energy company in the billion-dollar roundtable that recognizes companies who are spending over $1 billion with diverse suppliers. And at BGE, it is also important to note that when I took over as CEO, we were spending a roughly 14% of our supply spend with minority and women-owned businesses. Last year, BGE spent 42% of their supply spend with minority and women-owned businesses. Prior to me getting there, it was increasing about 1% a year, and the leaders of the company would say, well, we don't know how to do it. We don't have these businesses out there, but yet we were able to do it. We were very intentional about it. We helped train them up, and again, BGE's reliability is the best it's ever been, and I think, and customer satisfaction, because of the partnerships we've been able to form. Those are just two examples of what Exelon is doing, and I'm very proud of the efforts that the company has made.
Calvin Butler is my guest. Among the many titles he holds, he is the CEO of Exelon Utilities. That's a group of companies that includes BGE. He's also the chair of the Greater Baltimore Committee. I'm Tom Hall. You're listening to Midday. And Cal Butler, I think that it's no coincidence that BGE has made those kinds of strides, and you have, and Exxon's made those kinds of strides in terms of diversity, equity, and inclusion, because you've been the CEO of Fortune 500 companies. There are fewer than 1% CEOs who are African American. So these companies, you know, that you've been leading, have a culture that comes from the top. And as you just outlined, you know, the results kind of speak for themselves. Can you identify other companies here in Baltimore that are making those kinds of strides? And are there strides being made by companies that don't right now have African-American leadership at the top echelons?
I think there are definitely companies that I can point to. And I'll speak specifically for the Baltimore area. I think T. Rowe Price is making significant strides. You look at T. Rowe's leadership and how they engage in the community on a broader basis, they're making an impact, not only within the culture that's within the organization, but also their impact on community. I would say the leadership over at CareFirst Blue Shield, making an impact, looking at their leadership team, under the leadership of Brian Pinnock. I mean, they're doing the things that people are noticing, and they're not just doing it because they want recognition. They're doing it because these are sustainable efforts and impacts that are going to be felt for generations to come. And I would also say, point to Whiting Turner. What I appreciate about Whiting Turner, their leadership team, they recognize their shortcomings, and they're systematically addressing them. And it's not only in their efforts in the community, but they're looking at their leadership structure. They're looking at, they recognize they need to create a pipeline to get people into management, to get people into executive leadership roles. That's an example of a company that's not there yet, but they understand it, and they're starting from the ground level and building up. So those are just three companies that I can point to that are very different in what they do and how they do it. But they've started this journey, and others have been on this journey for some time.
What can the public sector do? The mayor of Baltimore, Brandon Scott, ran on a platform of insisting on equity, centering equity in the decisions that the city government makes. The latest entry into the Democratic race for governor, Wes Moore, has indicated that he's going to make equity also very central to his campaign pitch to voters. Mayor Scott has appointed Dana Moore as the first chief equity officer of Baltimore. What can the public sector, the city government, the state government, even the federal government do to oblige or require businesses to center equity in the way that you're recommending?
Great question. I think the first and foremost thing to do is they have to recognize it's a partnership. For the government to come out and say, hey, this is important to us, and then not engage the business community in the conversation and view it as a partnership and collaboration, it's going to fall short. Because I believe you never make the true progress if you're forcing someone to do something. You have to put the carrot out there and sit back and say, we are not moving forward on these efforts if we do not engage all of our communities. And what's important about that, if you really want to grow not only a city but a region, you can't leave neighborhoods behind. You have to engage all the communities. And I think for the government to sit back and articulate the why and bring us up under the tent, the business community up under the tent, to talk about solutions rather than sitting back promulgating these rules that really have no way to be effective. Bring us in early and let's talk about solutions and how we can get there together, I find is much more effective. And when people talk about equity, let's really dive into the details, because the details matter. What do you mean when you say equity? Let's talk about the measures you're going to sit back and look at on a regular basis to see, are we truly making progress? We're not talking just throwing money at something, because again, this is a journey. And if we've been talking about these issues for 20, 30 years, why haven't they been addressed thus far? So engaging, putting measures in place, and making sure that your equity is the same as my equity and how we look at it, and let's really hone into it. So those are the most important parts. Everyone's talking about it. So the question that I would ask is that this is nothing new. It just became more intense over the past year as a result of the death of George Floyd, Ahmaud Arbery, and Breonna Taylor. So it's brought to the forefront, but we've been talking about this for a while. But yet, the statistics that you put out earlier, the results aren't there. So I would say, why is that? Because we've been working in silos, and we have to do it together to truly make a difference and then hold ourselves and each other accountable to do the things we said we were going to do.
And we will continue to talk about it after a quick break. My guest is Calvin Butler. He is the CEO of Exelon Utilities, a group of companies that includes BGE, and the chair of the Greater Baltimore Committee. We'll have more with Calvin Butler on the other side of a quick break. If you'd like to join our conversation, we're at 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wipr.org. Our Twitter handle, @MiddayWIPR. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.
You're tuned to your NPR news station, 88.1 WYPR.
Welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, coming up tomorrow, the controversy over critical race theory. In the halls of Congress and in state houses across the country, Republican lawmakers are acting against CRT, complaining that it is a, quote, prejudicial ideological tool. So as the issue takes front and center in the culture wars, we'll talk about it tomorrow with Congressman Andy Harris, who's a co-sponsor of a bill that would ban the teaching of CRT in K-12 schools, Dr. Rayshon Ray of the University of Maryland, and Charles Lehman of the Manhattan Institute. So that's coming up tomorrow here on Midday. If you've just joined us today, my guest is Calvin Butler, the chair of the Greater Baltimore Committee and a top executive at Exelon, where among his other duties, he serves as the CEO of Exelon Utilities, a group of companies that includes BGE. To join our conversation, we're at 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wipr.org. You can tweet us @MiddayWIPR. You can follow me, if you feel like it, @TomHall WYPR. So, Cal Butler, there are so many people who want to feel optimistic about the city of Baltimore, who are willing to do what is asked of them to make the city better. But time and again, day after day on this show and when I'm off the air, I'm talking to people who are demoralized about what's going on in our city. What is the role of the business community, the folks at GBC who you are working with, in bringing back, that real sense of optimism and really bringing the city back? There's obviously a role for the public sector, but how do you see the specific capacity of the business community to improve the city?
Tom, that's a great point, and you've nailed it. And I'd be lying to you if I didn't say that I didn't feel that way at one point, too. Because I'm committed. Baltimore is my adopted city. You know, I've been there since 2013, first arrived in 2011, and I fell in love with the city. I really did. And wasn't exposed to the city really outside of coming to a baseball game at Camden Yards. But my approach has always been jump right in. And to tell you, I'd be lying to you and your listeners if I didn't tell you I didn't get frustrated along the way. But what I also recognized is that I needed to continue to lean in. Because if we were going to uplift the city and move it forward, it needed all of us. We couldn't sit on the sidelines and start and just point fingers. The role of the business community, as I look at it, is that we need to lead by example. And that is what we're really trying and doing at the GBC. When we talk in equitable lens, it started with us. At the board meetings, we talk about, we can't just talk this. We have to tell people what we're doing and how we're doing to provide a roadmap for others. And to let them know that we're not only looking at contributing to major causes across the city, making sure that major projects are funded, but we're going to go internally and do the nit and grit of looking at our policies and our procedures to ensure that we're not unintentionally excluding anyone who wants to get engaged, looking at our policy positions to ensure that they're not biased toward any one particular group, making sure that our board is more representative of the region that we partake to say this is who we are. So the business community has the role of leading by example, has the role of pushing and prodding government elected officials to be transparent and actually hold them accountable to do what they say they're going to do. And so often we have taken a position of impartiality, you know, of just saying, hey, you know, we're going to support you, and then they make some decisions and say, well, they're elected, they're the governor, they're the mayor, and it's all good. We'll just continue to work on them on this other issue. No, we need to hold them accountable just as they hold us accountable. And I do believe the accountability works both ways. And we're stepping up and filling that void.
Yeah, is there a tension between, you know, you talked in your speech to the annual meeting of the Greater Baltimore Committee a few weeks ago about the importance of business leaders and businesses being interconnected with our communities here in Baltimore. But is there a tension between that interconnection and creating shareholder value, which is what CEOs are supposed to do? People invest in these companies, and by golly, they better make money or heads are going to roll. So is there a tension?
I think no. And the reason I say this is I think by being good community partners, lifting up the communities, you build value in your organization. You know, I define equity as fair and impartial. And I think just you look at the ESG craze that's going across organizations. People are now holding businesses accountable for the very measures that we're talking about today. I think we create more value in our organizations when we take a holistic approach about engaging all of our communities. Now, let me just be very clear. For our utilities, we thrive as our neighborhoods and our communities thrive. As Baltimore grows, BGE grows. So I can tie in the direct correlation between who we are and what we do. Not only does it make business sense, and good common sense, this is something that is in our DNA. So I think just the opposite, Tom. I think it's that interconnectedness makes all companies stronger.
Calvin Butler is the CEO of Exelon Utilities and an executive senior vice president at Exelon. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall. Let's go to the phones to Ann, who's on the line from Annapolis. Ann, welcome to Midday with Calvin Butler.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. And thanks, Mr. Butler, for being, you know, here on the show. I really appreciate all that you're doing. And my question has really to do with the minimum living wage. And, you know, people all around the country are fighting for $15 an hour, and that's nowhere near a minimum living wage, being defined as something like, you know, what you can rent a two-bedroom apartment for if you're going to support a family of three or four. So it's more like $20 or $25 an hour in Baltimore. And, you know, my question, it speaks to building a pipeline. If you don't have people who can raise a family with, you know, money to save for college, you're not going to have a pipeline. And so, I mean, my question is, you know, those companies that you mentioned in the Greater Baltimore Committee, what are they doing about a minimum living wage? If they're already paying it, what are they doing to get other companies across Baltimore to pay a minimum living wage that people can live on?
All right, thanks for the call, Ann.
Ann, thank you. Great question. And it's a question that I'm passionate about. You know, people always say, you know, what drives you? And I would sit back and say workforce development and creating opportunities for people is really what drives me. Take a step back to GBC. GBC created a report and did extensive work, on a report called Preparing for the Future, a regional workforce development initiative. And the purpose of that report was to identify the top 20 occupations that were likely to produce the most family-supporting jobs in the Baltimore region over the next decade. We came out with recommendations, and we partnered with businesses and the educational institutions from high school to community colleges, primarily, and even the higher education institutions, to sit back and say, are we training our young people and students for the jobs of tomorrow? Because to your point, we wanted to create a family sustainable career, not just a job, but a career. And that is where the GBC team has leaned in and really partnering to develop the region resources to create a pipeline of skilled workers to fill high-growth family-supporting jobs. At Exelon, we started several years ago to start working with the high schools across the region because electric jobs were a key industry to hire young people that do not need college degrees on making, with overtime, well over six figures. But they needed to know we were a place where they can be employed. Across Exelon today, Ann, we have trained over 2,200 people over the last 3 years and have employed well over 300 with not only our company, but with our suppliers. And these are jobs these individuals can have for a life career if they so choose, and the skills are transportable. I'd love to give you one story. We had a young lady out of, I want to say, Mervo, who was an intern in our transportation department in mechanics, as a mechanic. She ended up taking a full-time job upon graduation, and her story was very quick. So she goes, I never knew BGE was a place I could work. And shame on us for not being a company that these young people think of that they can go. And the GBC companies, in addition to that, are looking at the qualifications that they're putting out on these job sites where we're challenging ourselves to say, is a college education really needed to do X, Y, or Z? Or are we just putting that out there as a blocker? And what we're saying, we're going through and doing that evaluation within our own companies, and the answer is, college degrees, in a lot of cases, are not needed. And we're changing that and therefore opening up opportunities.
Is there an employee shortage in the energy industry? I mean, this is very front of mind for folks given Governor Hogan's decision just last week to discontinue federal subsidies for unemployment. And he gave us his reason for that decision, that there are jobs that are plentiful. Are your managers telling you that they're having a difficult time filling positions at Exelon? And are the folks at the Greater Baltimore Committee echoing that?
Yes. And when you say difficult time, let me just say this, is that we recognize that in the energy field that we will have a abundance of retirements over the next 5 to 10 years. So creating that pipeline that we spoke about earlier is essential. In the construction industry, we know we have a shortage of workers. In the healthcare industry, shortage of workers. So those are just a couple of the industries that we've identified that we really need to build up our skill gap and really target. So those are just a few, but my people are telling me exactly that. But we have to eliminate the inequities and the barriers to hiring these young people and these people in general to get them back to work.
And how do you think the wages that these industries are offering are affecting this shortage? I mean, is it a matter of people without the skills, the pool of talent not being big enough, or is it a matter of people just simply not being attracted to these businesses because they're not, at the moment, they're just not paying enough?
Well, they're definitely paying enough. And I would sit back and tell you that it's a combination of those things that you identified. One, companies weren't out there recruiting in some of our most distressed neighborhoods. Two, the people in the neighborhoods didn't know the opportunities even existed. I will give you an example at BGE, because I think that's always telling. BGE did not have a strong platform of African-American engineers. And so when I came in, I said, why is that? Well, Calvin, we just can't find them. I said, well, you know you have the number one engineering school from HBCUs in the country in Morgan State. Tell me about your recruiting there. Well, we really don't recruit there as much. We do some, but we don't have a systematic process to go. I said, so think about what I just said. We're having trouble getting African-American engineers within the company. We have the number one HBCU graduating engineers in the country, but yet we don't have a systematic way of recruiting them. That's just one example of being intentional about our efforts and digging in, saying if we have an issue, let's go do it. Because you cannot get a different pipeline if you go to the same sources.
Let's go to the phones to Barry, who's on the line from Baltimore. Welcome to Midday with Calvin Butler.
Hi. I have a really quick question. We're a two-person small operation in Baltimore City that does photography. Is it realistic to think that we could get some type of engagement with a huge company like Exelon? And how would we go about doing that?
And I'm sorry, Ms. Berry, what type of company do you have?
It's a photography company.
So the quick answer is yes. There is a way. And I would say, but we have BGE has a program called Focus Forward, where we've identified small companies in the city and the region that are interested in doing business with us. A lot of times, small companies like yourself don't know where to start. So therefore, each of our companies have a manager of business empowerment to help you walk through the process, because the process can be overwhelming. And what we do is take you through an 8-month program on how to do business with us. And what's more important about that is not just doing business with us, it prepares you to do business with other large companies, because our processes, albeit different, are very similar. The paperwork and so forth. And that is how we go about doing it, because we want to make sure you're equipped that once you get a job with us or an assignment with us, you're in a position to keep it and then grow your business.
In the report that you mentioned that GBC published last year, you encouraged the state of Maryland and other local jurisdictions to invest more in basic adult education. And you said that our state invests less in adult education than peer states and localities. That's interesting to me. I mean, there's one thing about, you know, it's one thing to get involved with MERVO or some of the, you know, CTE training programs in high schools and stuff, but you're talking about adult education. So you do offer on-the-job training to grown-ups, right?
Absolutely. Because, again, we love a track record of work performance. We love the fact that our employees can be a referral base for people that they know, because they know our culture and they know what it takes to be successful. So we have a very extensive, across all of our utilities, a very extensive training program. So you don't have to come in being a gas technician. We'll teach you that. What we need are the basic skills of wanting to work, wanting to show up on time, wanting to be committed to a team, and a commitment to safety, not only of yourself, but your coworkers and the public, because the public entrusts us to do our job well and to keep them safe. So those are our guiding principles.
All right, and that's an answer to an email we got from Stephanie about whether or not you train new hires. Calvin Butler is the CEO of Exelon Utilities and the chair of the Greater Baltimore Committee. We'll have more with Cal Butler after a quick break. 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wipr.org. Our Twitter handle, @MiddayWIPR. I'm Tom Hall. Stick around.
You're listening to your NPR news station, 88.1 WYPR.
And welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. If you've just joined us, my guest is Calvin Butler, the Senior Executive Vice President of Exelon and the CEO of Exelon Utilities. That's a group of utility companies in Maryland, Washington, D.C., Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and Illinois. Last February, Exelon announced it was separating the utility part of their business from the power generation part. This is taking place in a turbulent year in the energy sector amid increased concern about service disruptions caused by weather and climate change, as well as cyber attacks like the one that created havoc with the Colonial Pipeline just a few weeks ago. Calvin Butler is with us until the top of the hour here on Midday. 410-662-8780. Our email's midday@wipr.org and our Twitter handle @MiddayWIPR. So, Cal Butler, just a couple days ago on CNN, the Secretary of Energy, Jennifer Granholm, said that she's convinced that there are adversaries who have the capability to shut down the U.S. power grid. She said that they are trying to do just that as we speak. Give us your assessment of the security of the power grid in the United States.
First, let me just say I agree with her assessment, and which is exactly why at Exelon we invest hundreds of millions into our cyber defenses and our physical security of our premises. Having said that, I still feel that we're vulnerable, and we're diligent each and every day. What's concerning is not what we're doing at Exelon, because we're doing a lot. We have an entire team that's focused on this each and every day. But there are other companies out there, our suppliers, who are much smaller, other smaller utility companies that do not have the resources to invest. And when you get into one of those companies through a back door, and you're working with us in some capacity, we become vulnerable. So we have set up a three-tier level of defense that we look at and we manage each and every day. But to tell you that, you know, everyone always asks you what keeps you up at night. So, Tom, this is it. When you saw what happened to Colonial Pipeline, it can happen. But because of the diligence we've put in place, we feel that we are not as vulnerable. But to say that we're not susceptible, I'd be misleading you, but we do feel once something like that was, if it were to happen, we can isolate it and get our system up and running because of the defenses that we've wrapped around ourselves. But yes, it is very concerning, and we're working with the federal agencies to ensure that we have an open line of communication. What I do appreciate about the utility industry and the energy sector, if it happens to one of us, we have a protocol in place that we're all in communication, and we go on heightened alert. And that is something that we've built over the years.
There are those who look at what happened in Texas this past winter, where they had some unseasonably cold weather, and it shut a lot of people down when it came to their electricity. And there were those who said that's a perfect example that more governmental regulation is needed and more governmental coordination is needed. The reason that happened, according to some, was that, you know, Texas got behind the notion that the market was going to fix everything. So there's this very competitive free market for energy. And then after that event, you have people getting $10,000 monthly energy bills, you know, to make up for the deficit that the companies had not anticipated. When it comes to cybersecurity, to say nothing of security against weather events and climate change, I mean, is there a role? What do you see the regulatory role of state, local, and federal governments? I mean, is there a need for the government to be directly involved in, or more involved in a different way, in the security of the electrical grid?
Well, the government is involved, and let me just kind of walk you through how. Each of our utilities go before the commission, whether it's every year or every 3 years, in BGE's case, now in a multi-year rate plan, and they say what we're investing in. And the utilities also lay out, in part of that investment plan, what they're investing in security, both cyber and physical. And the commission, and we have that dialogue with the state-level commissions on a regular basis because they are the ones in position to approve that investment. So they're very much involved. What's difficult, or what has been difficult, about physical and cyber investment and the infrastructure, those aren't things that you as a customer, Tom, can see and feel. You don't. So therefore, when I talk about investing $100 million over the next few years into cyber and physical security, you don't feel that until something happens. So that's why it's very important to have that proactive conversation with commissioners to talk about the importance, because it's impacting your bill each and every month. So we have to, one, justify that investment on why we're doing it, convey to the commissioners why it's important, and then convey to you as my customer why it's important. Because I don't want to be in a position to have to come back to you and say, well, you didn't let me invest X, Y, and Z, and therefore A happened. So they are involved, and it's up to me, it's my responsibility and my leader's responsibility to convey the importance and the significance of the investment.
We have a caller on the line from Pigtown, Darnell. Welcome to Midday with Calvin Butler.
Good afternoon to you all. I have a question. I'm an older worker who's been displaced by the pandemic. I have a strong history of work. I hear you have a lot for younger people. What about us who may have 5 to 10 or more good years left? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Darnell. I would say, Darnell, if you think working in the energy industry is something that you would like to do, I would encourage you to get online, look up the opportunities that exist within BGE and or Delmarva Power, Pepco. We have classes. Those classes are not just about young people. We talked about this earlier. We're looking at work-ready adults ready to get engaged and let's go, because it's very important that we get you back into the workforce if you want to, and we're a company that's open to that. And if you have any questions about how, once you get online and you just didn't get, don't hesitate to call someone at the company or send an email to our people working in HR and so forth, and we can direct you to the right place. But yes, we're very much interested in individuals like yourself.
But you're saying that BGE Exelon does have jobs now. We're looking at a 6.2% unemployment rate here in Maryland. That's double what it was a year ago. But you're saying there are jobs,
yes,
available.
Sir. We have our training programs. We're filling them. We will operate, and my number may not be totally correct, but I believe each of our utilities across the Mid-Atlantic region are hosting at least 3 training programs each. because we have that need. We're creating that pipeline. We're investing across Exelon Utilities, Tom. We're investing $6.5 billion annually. And if it's not with us, we have suppliers that are looking for employees because of the level of investment that we're putting in, and they're partnering with us.
Let's go to Clarence, who's on the line from New Freedom, Pennsylvania. Clarence, welcome to the program again. Always nice to hear from you, sir, and you're on with Calvin Butler.
Thank you, Tom, for taking my call. Mr. Butler, I'm a retired employee. I worked at the school, and before the pandemic hit, I was trying to make arrangements. Yeah, I'm not going to name any names, but they're prominent professors at three colleges in Baltimore, and they keep pushing an education, and you made reference to BGE's on-the-job training. And I've been trying to make arrangements to be able to go to the school and also RBC, so a day tour of each place so that they could see that there are jobs. The job afforded me to be able to send two children to private school, college, have a nice home, take nice vacations, and have a nice retirement.
And you work for BGE, is that right, Clarence?
That's correct. I retired in 2002.
Mm-hmm. How many years?
Well, Clarence, thanks for that.
How many years were you with the company, Clarence?
I was at I was an instructor at the school, and I started out at Front Street, Monument Street, 1971. And when I ended my career, I was at the school at Arlington over off of Northern Parkway.
Yes, sir. So first off, Clarence, thank you. Thank you for your many years of service. And I hope you're proud of what you see at BGE and what we're trying to do in the communities and how we've really lived up to service model that you and so many others put together. Clarence, you're absolutely right. I mean, we want to get young people into the workforce for family-sustaining careers, just as you outlined. You're exactly what I've been talking about on this call. In addition to that, once people start with us, their education doesn't have to stop. We pay for people to go back to school if they wish. So this is not a get in and you're done. We encourage you, if you want to continue to get your education, you put in the time, we will pay for your education. That's one of the opportunities that you have at BGE. But what you've just said is exactly what I was referring to earlier, that there are opportunities out there, and we're working with the high schools, we're working with the community colleges to get that message out.
Great. And Cal Butler, we have just about a minute left. We have an email from Steven who says, is Exelon adapting its distribution system in the direction of microgrids and distributed energy storage?
The short answer is yes. We have, across our utility footprint, we've put pilots in place to demonstrate once again to the commissions that as our customers are looking to install solar panels, as technology is advancing from battery storage, as microgrids are coming up to age, we are sitting back saying we're making sure our system can handle all that new technology, and we have pilots in place across the jurisdictions to demonstrate that. But once again, that's also a conversation that we have on a regular basis with commissioners to justify that investment and explain the why. But to your point, yes, we are, and we're doing that across all of our jurisdictions.
Calvin Butler is a top executive with Exelon, the CEO of Exelon Utilities, and he's the chair of the Greater Baltimore Committee. Cal Butler, thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it. I hope we can do it again sometime.
Tom, I look forward to it, and thank you for having me.
That's it for us today. Coming up tomorrow, a conversation about critical race theory. Republicans are trying to legislate it out of American classrooms. We'll talk about why that is and what it is and why it's becoming such a talking point in the culture wars. First District Congressman Andy Harris, Charles Lehman of the Manhattan Institute, and Dr. Rayshon Ray of the Brookings Institution will join me tomorrow here on Midday. Coming up now, it's Here and Now after the news at the top of the hour. Don't forget to download the Daily Dose with my good buddy Aaron Henkin and check out the Chesapeake Connect podcast as well. I host that one. It's about regionalism in the Baltimore metro area. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks so much for being with us here today on Midday. Let's talk again tomorrow.
You're listening to your NPR News Station. Member supported 88.1 WIPR.